just want to say welcome to the New York Society Library. We're the oldest library in New York City, founded in 1754. So we've got lots of stories here, if any of you want to come back and sort of delve into the story of the library. My spot here is very quick. It's really just to ask you if you have any cell phone or anything else that might go off and disrupt the presentation, that you please turn it off now. We appreciate that. And I want to say thank you to Mickey Murray and Sydney LeBlanc, who have created this great event called Uptown at Night, and the library is very pleased to be a venue for it. I went to one before, it was really fun, really great, and we just said, we should just do this here at the library, because it was a lot of fun, and we're really looking forward to it. So thank you to Mickey and to Sydney, and at this point, I'm going to hand it off to Sydney to start the party.
New Jersey. I thought I was going to die. And so we moved to New Jersey, and where I proceeded to do volunteer work for the next 10 years, and if there was a board in New Jersey, I sat and heard if it had anything to do with New Arts and Education. And I had a wonderful time. And then suddenly, my mother died. My mother died, like, I found that she was sick and she was dead 6 weeks later. And I'm telling you, I thought I was going to lose my mind, right? So I went to Peter Frank, the longest suffering Peter Frank, my husband. And I said, you got to buy me mama's house and we'll sell the house to settle the estate. And the house had been in our family for about 100 years. And he said, Teresa, is that stupid? No offense, y'all. He said, if you think I'm going to spend the rest of my life sitting on your mama's front porch watching all y'all get drunk while you tell the same stories over and over again, I'm not doing it. I said, Peter, if I don't get mama's house, I'm going to die. He said, well, then you need to go back to work and make money. I said, okay, I'm going to do that. So I didn't know what I was going to do. So I went to, it was Christmas. My mother had died in October. It was December. And I had to mail some packages. It was a true story. So I went to Walmart, because that's what you get in New Jersey. You get the Walmart, okay? So I had to buy wrapping paper. So I went there, bought some wrapping paper, and I saw a table of books that were on sale. I now know that they're called remainders. Okay? Those days, I just thought, for $5, what's she got? And, you know, there is a certain author out there who's been writing for about 35 years who has, like, a palace in San Francisco and a 200-foot yacht. I'm talking about, I'm not saying anything. And I said, what's this woman got that I don't have? And so I bought this stupid book, and I took it home, and I read it in about 3 hours, and I threw it across the room with my husband, and I said, I could write this ridiculous book in 6 weeks. He said, oh, yeah? Let's see you try. Fighting words. Okay, so when we say down south, we say, fuck you, right? But if you live in New Jersey and you're from the state, you go, fuck you. New Jersey, a little Charleston, and I sat down and write. Took 2 years. And then I it was my first book. It was called Sullivan's Island. And it went on, it debuted on the New York Times list at number 9. And it's gone back to press about 35 times. And over 80 copies were printed when I was reading different languages. And suddenly I had a career. So, you know, so that was really fun. That was the fun part. So then I had to write another book. Not so much fun. So then, my sister called me up. Everybody here has an older sister than that. It's the worst, right? So my older sister called me. You gonna write another book? She was an editor. She said, you gonna write another book? I said, yeah. She said, I just want you to remember something. And I said, what's that? She said, I have to live here. I like your family. And then there's my mother-in-law. My God, I would give money to have her here tonight. This would be wonderful. She called me up after I finished Palm Beach, and she just read the manuscript, and she said, she's 95. Okay, so we have to fit there. But she said, did you do a lot of research for this book? And I said, yes, ma'am, I always do a lot of research for that book. And she said, well, I knew you must have, because you couldn't possibly know all this stuff. Anyway, so the deal was, I got a contract for 2 more books, and now I'm going to publish my 18th novel this summer. So it's a good one. It's overstory, you know, like it was like now, like how it was like such a drag, and then you said, did I just wrote a bestseller? Not one book, perhaps? Anyway, people always want to know, how do you get ideas for books? I want to tell you 2 short stories, and I think I have to stand down. But anyway, first one is about ideas for books for The Last Original Wife. Did anybody here read that book for John? There's one person in the room who's heard of it. God, I love you. That's right. I have no idea. Okay, so this is based on a true story. We have a couple that are friends of ours in New Jersey. I hate to say that. I mean, hell, against my wishes. So, 35 years, right? Sure. Anyway, this couple, they were like the worst married couple you ever met in your life. The worst. I mean, if you went to a benefit and they were sitting at your table, you'd be like, just write the check, just move me to another table. You know, like they hated to sit with them. They should have killed each other 50 years ago and they didn't. Well, anyway, they went on vacation, they went to Rome, right? And they had a big lunch, and I guess they must have had some wine to drink at lunch. And she had a new phone that was taking pictures, and when they left the restaurant, he was walking in front of her, about 25 feet in front of her, and instead of holding her hand like you should with your wife in a foreign country and you're half in the bag, okay? But anyway, she fell in an open manhole. Here's the best part. He got the whole way back to the hotel before he realized she was missing. And she broke her collarbone and knocked her teeth and just And then he was furious with her because she ruined their vacation. I said, this is a book. This is totally a book. So that's where that book came from. It's called The Last Words of a Wife. If you read this thing and you don't think it's funny, I'll give you money back. Because it's a terrible story. And so I thought, you know, really, it's great. People are just all the time. So my book is coming out this May. I think May 18th, Suzanne, is that it? May 18th is my pub date this year. This is Suzanne Blackwell. She's my fearless agent from Weir Barnes Endeavor. So anyway, it's called Same Beach Next Year, because my books always have to have beach in the title or something to really trivialize the whole work. And Suzanne will tell you, I've gone to hell and back with my publisher over my stupid covers and my stupid titles, because I wouldn't be caught dead with one of my covers walking down the street. I would throw that in the garbage. But as sure as God is my witness, I wrote Proust. They would have a 12-year-old girl on the cover of that thing and a bathing suit and water in the background. People would just think, what books out of the table? Anyway, Same Beach Next Year is sort of updated, very updated, Wallace Stegner's Crossing for Safety. Would anyone want to read that book?
Yeah,
half the room. Okay, fine. There you go. So we never heard of me. I thought, why are we paid? I mean, anyway, so old Wallace Stegner's story is about two couples and their great friendship, and the story unfolds over several decades. And so I've done taking that, and I'm using that, and it's placed in Isle of Palm, South Carolina, which is part of the country. And these two couples, the difference in my book of all the statements is in 2017, people have sex. Okay, so the husband of one couple used to sleep with the wife of the other, and they manage most of the way through the book to never let the other couple go. And then, of course, things get exciting. So that's what that story is about. And I can stand here all night. I'm out of time. I'm out of time. It's been swell. Happy New Year, everybody.
Contact the seller's agent. Her clients were away
By the next morning, we had a deal. We set a date to close in 7 weeks. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. If you've ever bought or sold residential property, you are familiar with the final walkthrough. The day before, or the day of the closing, the buyer walks through the apartment or home, turns on the light switches, the faucets, the dishwasher, the washer dryer, sees that what they are buying is what they agreed to buy. It's usually a perfunctory exercise, 10 or 15 minutes typical. For the convenience of my clients, the walkthrough and the closing would take place on the same day. Walkthrough at 10:30, and the closing at 3 in the attorney's office. On the list of furnishings they purchased with the apartment, there was a safe with an electronically controlled combination built into the floor of a walk-in closet. The doctor was particularly interested in this safe, and per his request, they had zeroed out their combination. He'd be able to enter his own combination. Having satisfied himself and his wife that everything else in the apartment was as they expected, he entered the walk-in closet and sat on the floor to test the safe. The sellers provided him with instructions for programming the safe. Somehow, he failed to follow those instructions properly. He closed the safe and could not reopen it. Not to worry. The seller's agent contacted the safe company. They said the safe automatically resets after 30 minutes. So, we wait. He does it again. We wait again. The doctor is about 5 feet 4, quite heavy set. He's sitting on the floor of the walk-in closet. He looks like Buddha. He's angry. He's petulant. The angry Buddha announces there will be no closing until he can succeed in closing and reopening the safe. And he keeps failing to do that. What happened to 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3? The rage is rising within me. Bloody thoughts are in my mind. He's going to call off the deal because of that safe. It is time to remember someone is in charge, and it's not you. Okay. 4 hours after we arrived at the walkthrough, he finally closes and reopens the safe. The deal is saved. He's a dreamboat at the closing. He loves everyone, and everyone loves him. Happy ending. Let us recall the wisdom of Yogi Berra. It ain't over till it's over. My second tale is about a seller. Let's call him D. He was a guy I knew from my neighborhood in Queens. I mostly saw him in the gym. I go to the gym on different days at different times to fit my schedule. Any day and any time that I went to the gym, D was there. From our conversations, he knew I was in real estate. One day he tells me he'd like me to sell his house. We made a date for me to visit his house. It turns out to be an 1890 wood frame structure falling apart. It's clearly a teardown. No one is getting a certificate of occupancy to live in this building, as Dee and his 90-year-old mother have done for many years. Dee does not work. He has no money. The house is his one and only asset, and he's counting on it to fix his life. Once upon a time, Dee's house was one of 20 on his block, all built around the same time. All of his neighbors had sold previously to commercial interests that replaced them with warehouses. His was the last residence on this side of the street. Now, this happened to be in Long Island City, which you may know is the hottest neighborhood in Queens. There was an opportunity here if the right developer came along who saw the potential. Big if. Dee had a number in mind, and he would not sell for much less. As the months rolled by, we got lots of hits, and and lots of lowball offers. Then one day, a developer called, and he was in the right zone with his offer. Some countering, some haggling. By the next day, we had a deal. We went to contract. Then, the reality of the situation hit D hard. He had a house full of stuff, the accumulation of many years. What to do with it all? Where would they live now? How could he rent an apartment? He had no money until after the closing. He panicked. He called me up, sobbing, very upset. Michael, I cannot do this. I have nothing. I'm trapped. I have to stay where I am. Call off the deal. Someone is in charge. It's not me. I talk to Dee soothingly, gently. I assure him there is a way to resolve all of this. I have no idea what that is. I'm acting. I'm acting the part of his therapist. I'm stalling for time. Please don't throw away the opportunity. Give me time to figure something out. He agrees to wait and see what happens. Weeks go by and nothing happens, and nothing changes. The buyer is getting upset and nervous. Why don't we have a closing date? What's going on? One day, I'm talking to Dee on the phone, and he tells me the buyer, Jack the developer, is at his front door. Now it's my turn to panic. Cardinal rule for agents, the agent must be present anytime the buyer and the seller meet. I'm in Manhattan at my offices in Tribeca. Dee's house is 40 minutes away at a minimum. What's this guy up to? What's he saying? Is he going to change the deal? Is he cutting me out? I tell Dee to call me immediately after the meeting is over. He promises he will do that. We ring off, and I have a nervous breakdown while waiting for that call. Someone is in charge, and it's not me! Jack is about 70. He came to the U.S. from Italy as a child. He has a pronounced accent, quite colorful, actually. Dee is of the same heritage. Jack grew up in dire poverty. Now he is a very successful man. He owns many properties. He has a large demolition business. He sits down in Dee's house for a heart-to-heart talk. Jack says to Dee, I see how you are. You worry. You got no money. You got nothing. Where are you gonna live? Okay. When we close, you live here. In your house. No rent. Long as you need till you find a place. Everything you don't want in this house, you leave. I'm gonna tear this place down. That's my biz. You leave. I take care of everything. You know why. Then he reaches into his pocket and takes out a large roll of cash. He gives Dee $9,000 and says to him, you say nothing about this. He did not cut me out. He did not change the deal. He made the conclusion possible. The next day, Dee went to a men's clothing store on Madison Avenue and bought himself a suit, his first in many years, to wear to the closing, which took place about a week later. Postscript. Dee and his mother took an apartment in one of those handsome new towers on the waterfront in Long Island City, which turned out to be around the corner from the church his mother attended as a child. Happy
Next, we have Matt Mercer. 4 years, Matt had an amazing job. He was the caretaker and head docent.
Thank you so much for contacting me. I got to email it out of the blue in December, so I'm happy to be part of the inaugural celebration. So, I'm sitting in Dempsey's pub on the Bowery, drowning my sorrows in a pint of Guinness. I've just lost both my jobs, the rent is due yesterday, our credit card debt and student loans piled to the ceiling. So if something doesn't come through really quick, New York and I are done. I'm gonna have to leave. I don't want to do that. Then a friend of mine turns to me and says, well, I might have a solution. Do you want free rent for the rest of your life in New York City? And I said, you're nine. That doesn't exist. What are you talking about? Well, he said, well, you do have to make a few compromises. I said, well, of course you do. I was like, well, what do I have to do? He said, well, the first thing is, you have to live in the Bronx. All right, no big deal. My mother's from the Bronx. What else? Well, it's a basement apartment. It doesn't get much light. I'm like, all right, well, I'm paying for that privilege in Queens. What else? He's like, well, the big commitment is on the weekends. That's the deal. The apartment is in the basement of a historical house. And you have to give tours on the weekends. You're the docent, you're the caretaker. That's how you get the free rent. And by this time, he said free rent at least three times. And I don't even know why I'm still thinking about it. Yes, I'll do it. I'll get me an interview. I'll do it. He's like, whoa, hold on. There's one more detail you should know about. You have to be well-adjusted, really well-adjusted, to live in this house by yourself. Because you see, it once belonged to Edgar Allan Poe. And he says this as if to scare me off. And all these details may have scared off a more well-adjusted person. But at the time, I am desperate, I'm penniless, and maybe just a teensy bit depressed. In other words, I think it's perfect. Bo is desperate and penniless. I was like, yes, I'm over there, yes. So I throw myself at the Historical Society. I said, I'm your man. As long as I don't have to wear a frock coat and fake mustache and recite the Raven every weekend, I can do this. This is my destiny. And the director was very kind. She said, well, Matthew, a lot of people feel the same way you do when they hear the words free rent. But we just have to make sure that you know your Poe history and that you're gonna sign this contract that says you'll stay at least a year and you won't jump ship after a month. Because people have done that to us in the past. They've left after a month. And I was like, well, why would people leave free rent? Why would they do that? Have people gone crazy in the Poe house? And I meant it as a joke, and she's like, no. Officially, no. More red flags. So I just know I could do this. And so a couple of months later, I'm awarded the position of caretaker and head docent of Poe Cottage in the Bronx. And she's like, congratulations. Two more details. Don't tell anyone you live in the house for security and privacy purposes. And just we want you to consider yourself an ambassador to the neighborhood, an ambassador for Poe. And I didn't know quite what she meant by that until I literally get up there to Kingsbridge Road in the Grand Concourse. And I get off the subway, I'm hearing Nigerian accents, Jamaican, Bengali, Pakistani. I'm like, oh, I'm the outsider here. And I didn't have to be an ambassador for a 19th century poet to this global community. That is all of a sudden the weight of the job on me. So I go up to the Grand Concourse, and there's the cottage across the street, little 19th century clapboard farmhouse in its own little city park. And across the street, and there's a guy in the corner, a very young guy, was very pronounced then, and he zeroes right in on me. He's like, what's up? What do you need? I said, no, I'm good. Nothing. I walk on by and let myself into Poe's basement, which is literally it's one window looking out on the corner. I can see this guy doing this thing. I realize, oh, of course, he's just a local dealer of some kind. And so I see this man every morning when I get up because Poe did not pay. I had to go downtown for another job. So I get up at the crack of dawn, 5 in the morning, no sun. I get up and I let myself out the gate. It is a a city park, so it had a locked gate surrounding it, so I called it the gated community of one. Get out and walk out the front gate, and I'd see this guy every morning. We'd go through our routine. He's like, "What's up? What do you need?" I'm like, "No, I'm good. Thank you." And we did that about 5 times before he got the hint. But there's still this tension every morning between the two of us, because from his vantage point, he could tell where everybody was coming from, where the police and who was coming down what street, except me. He couldn't figure out, because the cottage is right there in the middle of nothing, and all of a sudden I'll just pop up and go boom. This little drug-free ghost just floating on by, and he would look at me like, I know he thought I was a narc or something. He just, where, what is this kid doing here? He's not here to buy drugs at 5 a.m. in the Bronx. What is he doing here? And I didn't belong there, and I didn't, and it was so hard to be part of the neighborhood. And the job starts that weekend. And that is even harder, because it turns out I know nothing about Poe. And my first tour is to a historian. She's like, "Oh, you're the new guy, huh? What can you tell me about the Griswold scandal?" Anyone? I don't know. And she's like, "Well, wasn't the Pit and the Pendulum written in this house?" And I said, "Yeah, I believe it was." She's like, "Actually, you're wrong. It was written in Philadelphia." So I am faking it left and right. I'm faking it, reading biographies over the weekend, trying to bone up. And then it was particularly hard, though, to fake it when one breed of visitor showed up at the house. And this one such gentleman shows up. He's got a pot belly and a big bushy beard and glasses. And halfway through my spiel, he just says, "Let me just stop you. Let me just stop you. Let me ask you something. Do you really consider Poe to be a major American poet?" And nobody had ever asked my opinion. It's been a couple months now. No one ever asked my opinion. Before, I'd just been regurgitating facts. And so I said, "Yes. Yes, I do." And he's like, "Well, that's unfortunate you feel that way, because I consider him to be second rate, frankly. And but I understand why you're saying that, because he's your author, you have to defend him. I get it, I get it. Because I look after a historical house, too." "Oh, you do?" "Yeah. In fact, it's an author's house as well." I was like, "Oh, really? Pray tell. Who's your author?" "Oh, you might have heard of him. Was by the name of Walt Whitman." "Yes, I've heard of Whitman. Now keep in mind, historically, Whitman did not like Poe's poetry. He felt it was way too dark for the American soul. So here it is now, the rivalry, the modern incarnation. This guy looks like Whitman, and 3 months on now, I have gone completely native, because my hair, I got mutton chop sideburns, I'm drinking a lot, I'm angry, I'm isolated, I'm lashing out at my critics. I am Poe." And so I take this very personally. I was like, "Second rate, huh?" I always felt Walt Whitman was a pretentious gas bag. I think the guy never heard of a period. "Ew, free verse. What's the..." I don't really feel this way, but it makes him really angry. He's like, "You can't say I'm all Walt Whitman." I was like, "Well, welcome to the Bronx Palace. I'm up here." And I got a call for that one from the society. But this happens. I got into arguments with rival caretakers from other literary homesteads. And I would get angry about it. I said, "Oh, you're from Sleepy Hollow? Why does the Washington Irving House get all the nonprofit funding? What's the deal? You got headless horsemen? Ooh, dude, whoop-de-doo, you know?" And so I'm becoming more passionate, but also slightly more unhinged. And then wintertime arrives, and I get buried alive by the snowstorms, which pile up that one window, leaving me no natural light. And by the time spring arrives, I'm like a grizzly bear coming out of his den. I'm hairy, I'm just completely discombobulated, I'm hungry. But then I start to get better at the job. You know, the buds come out, and the trees are blooming, and it's like great. I'm meeting people from the neighborhood. And then one afternoon, a guy comes up the walk, and he's got a very pronounced limp. And I know just right away it's the dealer from LinkedIn. Comes up the walk. "Hey, you tour?" "Yeah, come on in." So it's broad daylight, but we let him in. We're just the two of us now in the parlor. And he's nothing he asks me or anything he says is any different than any other tourist has ever asked me, but coming from him, it's completely loaded. He looks at all the furniture. He's like, "Wow, this looks really old. Is it worth anything?" "What did Poe write here?" By now I know. So he's like, "Ah, oh, the casket of Monte Pilato." "Oh yeah, that's the one about murder and revenge, right?" "They're all about murder and revenge, aren't they?" He's like, "I love stories about murder." Who doesn't, right? And then he gets real quiet, and he closes his eyes and puts two fingers up to his forehead, just like this. And just stays quiet. And I'm just sitting, okay, for a whole minute. And he opens his eyes, points a finger right at me. And he says, "Once upon a midnight dreary, as I pondered weak and weary, on many a quaint and curious vital forgotten law, as I nodded gently, napping suddenly the camera." And I stand there, like, what else am I going to do? And I think it was the whole poem, not quite sure. I think he flubbed it. But it just kind of petered out after the few nevermores. And I said, "Wow, that's that's impressive. That's good." And he said, "Yeah, I've had that in my head since 7th grade. Seldom maybe memorized that. I hate that poem just between you and me." So that person broke everything open. We talked about Vincent Price and Bronx history, and he just became just another guy in the neighborhood. I don't even know if he was a dealer. It just, that was my stereotype. But yeah, whatever. I walk him out to the porch at the end of the tour, and he shakes my hand, and he said, "You're doing a great job here. Keep up the good work. By the way, though, I have one more question for you. Do you live here? You live in this house? You live off of here." And I really wanted to say yes, because we've been pretty honest with each other, but of course I said no. Mm-hmm. I don't. And he's like, "Wow, that's too bad. You're pretty cool to live in a Poe's basement." Yes, this is good. And I know from the way he says that, I'm not fooling him one bit. He knows exactly who I am and where I live. We leave it at that. I think we have this implicit understanding now. Like, you don't tell anyone what I do on the corner, I won't tell anyone that you live here by yourself. So we leave it at that, he walks off. Of course, in that moment, we switch roles. He's the ambassador, I'm the tourist, and I have just been officially welcomed to the Bronx.
Rabies survival rate, probably not good either. Probably you should not attempt to calculate the odds of infection, given that you never actually took statistics in college, like all of your friends did. Probably you should not have gotten a degree in visual arts, but it is probably too late for that now. Probably you should not go to anxietyzone.com. Probably you should not spend 4 hours on anxietyzone.com reading stories about people who also worry about how they might have rabies because a fox possibly licked a doorknob where they placed their hand that contained a hangnail. Probably you should look up the definition of cyberchondria. Probably you should not burst into tears at the Oakland emergency room when the admitting nurse asks you why you're there and
and probably when she asks if you're a danger to yourself or others, you shouldn't clutch the chair and in a keening falsetto proclaim that you are there because, in fact, you want to live. Probably you should listen to the doctor when he assures you that there hasn't been a rabies, that such a rabies transfer is exceedingly rare, and there hasn't been a case of rabies in the Bay Area in decades. Probably you should not tell him that you can't die before your book, which you have not yet written, is published. With accolades. Probably you should not cry quietly over the discharge papers and the accompanying brochures in front of the parking garage and wipe your nose with the one labeled Living with Your Anxiety. Probably you should give that literature a good hard read. Probably you should stop referring to yourself as Old Yeller in conversations with your worried roommates. Probably you should also stop pantomiming handing them a shotgun. Probably you should not interpret the stinging from kicking a door frame as the distinctive tingling sensation so carefully outlined on WebMD that precedes the onset of fatal rabies symptoms. Probably you should not wonder if the malaise you feel is not in fact the result of lying 6 days near comatose with terror in your own bed, but rather the arrival of rabies characteristic disorientation. The tiny blonde child in a tutu clutching half a loaf of French bread, the one that is pirouetting across your line of vision just beyond the window pane, is probably the neighbor's granddaughter in town for a visit and not a rabies-induced hallucination. Probably you should not stare at a glass of water on the nightstand trying to determine if you are afraid of it yet. Probably you should consider how good it's all been. Probably you should come to grips with the fact that if you died soon, your life would be tragically short, but still meaningful. Your funeral would probably be well attended. Probably this would be the defining moment in your life when you faced death with steely eyes and heart palpitations and lived, in spite of an obscure and remote chain of events that, if they did result in your death, would be akin to a medical miracle, except the opposite of a miracle. If you do die of rabies, it'll probably write about you in science journals or the CDC newsletter or with MD. If after those 6 days are up and in the stale ailing air of your bedroom you have not yet died, probably you should take a shower and rejoin the living. Probably if you go running down the street screaming, "I embrace my own mortality," your well-meaning neighbors will not call the police. Almost definitely, probably. Thank you.
Name tag my neck. You are 72% more likely to believe what I have to say. I'm going to say that again. 72%. What we're really doing in New York is bouncing through everyone's narrative. You're either moving in or out of a story. If you don't want to live in New York, don't be here. I'm not angry, I'm disappointed because you know better than that. The neighbor you are jealous of may be dead in their apartment. So drop the jealousy. Jealousy is counterintuitive. Okay, you got me. You may think it's counterintuitive to use the word counterintuitive, and we may agree, but here it is, a new thing, and it's called intuitive validity. Hashtag TED Talks NYC. Hashtag intuitive validity. And you can either trust the intuitive validity or forget everything you know, so here it is. NYC, intuitive validity. Turn the me upside down and get weak. Intuitive validity is the newest goal. It's not the I that is the window to your soul. Is someone just rapping? Because it wasn't me. But I am going to break dance. Oh, I have the power. It's getting kind of hectic. It's getting kind of hectic. And welcome to, in the blink of an eye, New York City. Close your eyes. Open your eyes. Close them, open them, and close and open, and that's called blinking. That is how fast things move in New York City. New York City, a multitude of eyes, and by I mean we. I is we are I. It's about we as the new I. By the end of this talk, you'll understand what we mean. On my Wii phone, I have a series of images and slides and a video that I'd like to share with you. It'll serve as the touchstone for our time together. Blink of an eye, NYC, New York as the epicenter of Wii technology. New York is the center of the universe. We are the center of the universe. We are all bright stars. You're a bright star. I'm a bright star. We're all bright stars that will someday be extinguished. Literally. I'm going to say that again. Literally. If you see something, don't say something. It's none of your business. Or is it? How about if we see something, we say something, anything? I have two words for you. We. If there's no change, there's no change. They haven't been seeing the slides? Can we please check this? I am on the right cloud. What happened to the screen? Okay, can we just stop the streaming and reboot the presentation? I guess that's why they call it streaming. Okay. Everything is so fancy. It used to be a chalkboard. Okay. I'm still Doc Conroy. The image you would have seen at the beginning was the TED logo, and it morphs into the title of this talk, Link and I, NYC. And then, this was really clever. It was the letter I, not an actual I, that is superimposed over the New York City skyline, and the I is the Empire State Building. Then there were a series of images. There was one where there's a guy who's holding a cardboard handwritten sign that says he's a vet and he needs help. And the image presents a destitute narrative. I don't even like the word narrative. there was other images like smiling, happy, laughing people taking pics with selfie sticks. So we're going from cardboard vet to shiny, happy people in the blink of an eye. Oh my God, video. My assistant Brandon made the video. Brandon. He's too young. The music in the video, it was concrete jungle where dreams are made of. There's nothing you can't do, New York. I mean, basically, you have to go with the flow. You know, there are images of the East River, Hudson River, coffee pouring, hydrants in the summertime, rollerbladers, skateboarders, bikers, bullets. Bullets, no, that wasn't in the video, but I've been having this reoccurring dream that I'm on the subway, and, you know, I'm kind of getting attacked by bullets, and it's always on the 9 train, which doesn't exist anymore. It's just even stranger. Anyway, in the video, this person comes walking through, and they say, "Excuse me, I don't want to bother you. Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to bother you. I mean, what could possibly bother me more than the fact that I can't take care of another person that's right in front of me? I mean, what can I do to help to change? Give them change? Mostly, I just change the channel in my brain. Do I drink too much coffee? I love coffee. I can't wait to go to bed so I can get up and drink more coffee. But then I can't get to sleep because I've had too much coffee. I should go back to meditating. No carbs for a month. That should do it. I hate kale. It's all so Sisyphusian. I need a death coach, not a life coach. Stop being negative. Stop doing prayer hands. Nobody finds it sincere. Stop doing prayer hands, heart chakra, mind's eye. Someone's going to punch you in your mind's eye. So, in conclusion, where do we live? Most of us, no matter how long we've lived in the city, we know that it has changed. Some of you may have seen my last talk on that. Some of you have no idea what I'm talking about. You may be checking your phone, looking at your program, wondering, how many more pieces are there? Is this a talk, or is this just... alternative facts. That wasn't really a conclusion, that was more of a digression. So, in conclusion, apropos of nothing, where do we live? To live in the blink of an eye is to live in a city of eyes where we are all we. Pay attention to the eye next to you, on the subway, online, offline. We are we. There is no I in New York. Get home safe. Is this going to live on the internet forever? I am not giving refunds.
Thank you. backyard. So green.
Lura, lura, lura.
Look, a cow!
Hey, ah! Hey, Mr. Cow!
Hey!
He's waiting back!
He's hooving us! Hello! Hello!
Technically, that's a she.
Oh, that's right, yeah. It's a cow.
Like
Elsie the Gordon Mount, yeah.
Elmer.
Elmer?
The glue guy.
Yeah, that was the guy. Maybe they got together.
Maybe they got married.
Who knows what happens in Wisconsin?
That's right, yeah. Hey, you know, we've been driving for an hour and a half, and it seems like we just got up here.
Just seconds, doesn't it? Yeah.
Just seconds, yeah. Right. Well, let's just sit back, relax a little bit.
What are you doing?
Cruise control.
What?
It's one of the few things that still works on this old buggy.
I didn't know that kind of happens.
Hey, you know, when I get up there in Wisconsin, I'm going to have myself a brat.
Ooh, yeah.
Nothing tastes better than a brat from Wisconsin.
Yeah, the smell of the pine and the blue lakes. The dancing water, that's what they call it. The dancing waters.
The land of sky blue water.
Yeah.
Hams.
Hams.
Beer refreshing.
Yeah. You'll have to get the non-alcoholic now.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with the old duels.
Right.
Love the old duels. Tastes just like it looks.
Hammer. Yeah.
Hey, maybe we'll take the canoe out and go paddle around the lake
fun.
Or something.
That'd
you know?
Be really fun.
Show you a bit of the old J-stroke.
Okay, be careful with the drive.
And Coochie-Ching for boys.
Yeah, the J-stroke.
8 solid weeks out of every summer.
All right, I've seen the J-stroke.
Feather the paddle.
Riding.
J.
Okay.
Mom and Dad sent me up there every year.
Yeah.
8 weeks, that's right.
Just be careful with the
drive. I got it with my knee.
All right, be careful.
Change lane.
All right, be careful.
Change him back.
All right.
Do a U-wheel.
No.
Hey, I got it.
What?
Hold the wheel. There's the sunroof.
Now,
hey, Wisconsin! Hey, we're back, baby! Top of the world, man!
Top of the world!
Jeez. I swallowed a dragonfly or something.
Wheel,
nope. That was a mayfly.
Oh, okay.
Now I can tell.
How?
Tastes just like chicken.
Okay, baby.
Well, I wonder how they're doing up there anyway.
I'm glad we weren't invited to the rehearsal dinner.
Me
we don't
too,
need to go.
No,
who needs to get dressed up and get there?
Take your time, relax, enjoy yourself on the ride.
It'd be fun at the wedding, seeing all those attractive young people with everything to live for, their whole lives ahead of them.
That's right. All under a tent.
Dancing under the stars.
Very rustic.
Very chic.
Very
rustic wedding chic. That's very
nice. Hey, that reminds me, do we remember the mosquito repellent and the rain gear?
No, I think I have a broken umbrella in the back. What if it rains? What are we going to do?
Tell you what, let's tune in a local radio station
good
so
idea.
You can get a local weather report there.
Okay, this is Nelson Feely, WOBT News Weather and Community Report for the greater Rhinelander area. Alrighty, it's going to be another fine day out there today, just like it was yesterday. Tonight might get a little chilly, though, except down in the cranberry bogs or in the backseat of Billy Chernsky's Chevy. Kid's a real makeup king, and believe me, I've seen plenty of them in my day. Alright, Eddie, quit giving me the kibosh up there in the booth. I can tell a joke on the air every once in a while. What the heck? Alrighty, a reminder here for all of you apple nuts. Apple Festival is still going on down there in Crandon. This Sunday's bingo winner there will win a free trip to Algoma for the Trout Festival out that way. Of course, I'm kind of a musty man myself, but I suppose if you like trout, you like trout. Cracking myself up here. Okay, the following people have died at Memorial Hospital over the weekend. Miss Nesbitt Fouts, Jerry Ulap, and Archie Tompkins went together there as usual. Billy Fairport was caught under a road grader out on Highway 30. I guess the county road crew will be cleaning him up in good order. So don't worry about that. And Craig Edwards' boy Lyle was found drowned out in Pelican Lake after the prop of his ski-doo sharpened his lower body like a pencil. Already, I got a weather bulletin here from our Weather Center air spotters out there in Prairie du Chien. Jesus, man, looks like a blade of goulash. I got all sorts of lightning bolts and tornado swirls and whatnot. I guess another one of those Canadian clippers is going to clip us pretty good. I don't know if the geese are bringing it in or what. I guess your geese is as good as mine. Anywho, don't forget, tomorrow we'll be coming to you live from the parking lot of Bob's Townline Foods. We'll We'll host them the kickoff of Wacky Days in Sugar Camp, where there'll be wacky bargains galore and anything can happen. And last year was no exception. As I can attest, we still don't know who those people were, what happened to their clothes, and what was hanging from their appendages. All we can surmise at this point is it might have some connection to the disappearance of Ken Kransky's giant pigs and the bright flashing lights out in the Galay Forest. Well, here she is now, our own Peck showing Heidi with the food and business report. Welcome there, Peck. Now today she'll be featuring a menu at the Pine Isle Restaurant, formerly Arlene and Jake's, formerly Arlene and Dell's, formerly Jared Dell's, and I'm pretty sure I know why Arlene left down, but I don't want to gossip.
You don't want to gossip.
Here you go, Peck. There you are, right there.
Okay, thanks, Nelson. Well, let's get right to it. Today's featured Friday fish fry is at the Pine Isle Bar and Grill right there on Medicine Lake. You can pull your boat right up to the tables.
Oh, well, you got to get out of your boat to eat, though. Otherwise, the DNR will
get
up into your business and you'll be in trouble there. All right,
anyway. Tonight they've got the Medicine Lake Lobster for $7.99. It's lightly breaded crawfish tail meat with a spicy Cajun flavor. They also have a cheeseburger soup with a popcorn garnish.
Oh, fancy. That's very good.
For $10.99, you've got the family basket, which includes breaded cream cheese stuffed jalapenos, beer-battered mushrooms, beer-battered onion rings, beer-battered mozzarella sticks, beer-battered shrimp, and lightly breaded chicken strips. This food report was brought to you by Curves Fitness Centers for Women.
Well, what's the business report now, Beck?
Well, it's kind of sad. With the downturn of the economy, you can look that up. We have some sad news to report. The following local places have sadly closed. The Hodad Hut Diner on the corner of Superior and Main.
Oh, no, everybody in town is part of the Hodad Hut Diner.
It's
very popular.
Miss.
Oh,
it's
I'm
going to
miss the sushi cakes and everything.
I
heard that a bank is going in there now.
I heard a nail salon.
Korean or Hmong?
We're not sure, but I'm sure
they'll
I'm sure they'll do a good job. Nelson, do you remember when Camp Minnetonka for Girls went condo?
Oh, I sure do, yeah. Got a lot of ghosts in there.
Unfortunately, all the condo units have been foreclosed on. So anyone who's interested in buying an old girls' camp, you could probably get that pretty cheap.
Well, I think I'll throw my hat on that one.
Then that crisis thing, you can buy
some camp. Problems by buying that one.
Anyway, this just in. The town of Shuano is going out of business. They decided to return it to its original state of streams, lakes, and forests. You can call the Pitlick family for further information. They also do the plumbing.
All right, thanks, Peg. Now, before we get to your Friday funny, we've got a new feature here at WOBT we like to call Peg's Words of Wisdom. A few moments of inspirational thoughts from our own Peg Schoenheide, who recently traveled to Madison and attended a philosophical symposium entitled, Why?
Peg? Okay, thanks, Nelson. This goes out to all the listeners traveling on the highways and byways. When my Uncle Fred, who lives on a boat up in the Boundary Waters, when I was young and confused, know what to do, I'd ask him for advice. And he used to say, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. So remember that. That's important. All right. Now here's a tricky one that I picked up at the symposium. The road that is built in hope is more pleasant to the traveler than the one that is built in despair, even though they both lead to the same destination. One final word to the wise. Remember, a person often meets his destiny on the road he took to avoid it. No, I don't get that either. It's strange, whatever. Anyway, Pig Sam, watch out, do what's good for you, and make sure that your path has a heart.
Yeah, because you know, Peg, you got to live every day like it's your last, because one day you're going to be right. What's the Friday funny, Peg?
When I was driving out of Madison after the symposium, I saw a cute little car. It had stickers all over it, and one of them had a picture of Governor Walker on it. Oh, I know. Governor Walker. And under it, it says, does this ass make my car look big? So anyway, folks, stay safe. This is Peg Schoenheide and I will sign off for today.
Thank you.
there, and Dottie will be invited. So also we have an email sign-up sheet that we'd like to keep you posted on what's coming up with Uptown at Night. So please let us have your email, or Facebook page, or Instagram, or Twitter,
or whatever you have.
And just one last thing, we'll be back at the library here on May 24th with the solo show with the New Yorker cartoonist Roz Chad.